Welcome back to the program. 30-plus years ago, on January 20th, 1981, Ronald Reagan, in his first inaugural, said the following.
In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
Since then, we have been on an almost sustained path to tear down or discredit government. Even Bill Clinton, when under pressure, took off on government when he said that the era of big government is over. So today, in 21st century America, in an era of social networks, global interconnectedness, instant information, and rapid change, can the tools of the day do anything to transform our cynicism about government in a way that serves people, improves public policy, and perhaps finally transforms the terms of debate on the role of government? Those are the ideas put forth by California's 49th Lieutenant Governor and former two-term mayor of San Francisco, Gavin Newsom. He lays it out in his new book, Citizenville, How to Take the Town Square Digital and Reinvent Government. It is my pleasure to welcome Gavin Newsom here to the program this morning. Gavin, thanks so much for joining us.
Jeff, spectacular frame. I really appreciate the way you put that together. You know, it's interesting in this book, Citizenville, that I open up with the godfather, interestingly, of this movement. And I say this as a former two-term San Francisco mayor and a Democrat elected as Lieutenant Governor of California, that Ronald Reagan really jump-started this whole open data movement by taking government information that was in the vaults of various agencies and opening it up to the public. The one big example is satellite technology. The reason we have GPS today, the reason we're able to go to the Weather Channel or AccuWeather, is because of that movement to take that private information in the hands of these public agencies and open it up to private sector third-party uses. And it's very much the inspiration for some of the core ideas in this book.
One of the central premises of your book and of any discussion about this has to be more than reinventing government, the kind of thing that Al Gore once talked about. We need to redefine what government is about, it seems to me.
Yeah, and well stated, because and it's interesting, I struggled with the subtitle of this book where I did play an ode to Al Gore and the REGO efforts, their Reinventing Government Initiatives, and of course interviewed Vice President Gore and Bill Clinton about these ideas and principles as well. But you're right, if you're reforming something, you're presuming you're using the same ingredients as opposed to redesigning and reimagining, as you're suggesting, which I think is a much more effective frame. The whole point is this, that we have right now a model of governing where you vote and guys like me decide. It's a one-way conversation. We use the tools of technology relatively effectively to get elected. But once we get elected, we turn those voices off and we go into this broadcast model for every 2- and 4-year cycle. And the principle I'm trying to advance here is citizens cannot be treated as subjects any longer. We can't do things to you. We need to start doing things with you and have this two-way active citizen engagement, two-way conversation, and technology can be the enabling capacity or platform to allow us to begin to do that.
In taking a look at how to do that, it seems that there are two models. One is to really focus on local government, regional government at the most, and then maybe there's a way to bring this technology to bear, or to figure out ways in doing that to scale this up so that it can work on a broader national scale.
It's interesting. The work I'm doing as Lieutenant Governor, I've come to quickly realize that, you know, in issues of economic development or whatever the issue of the day is, that having a top-down framework no longer services our needs. That if you don't like the way the world looks when you're standing up, stand on your head and go local. And you'll see remarkable things happening at the local level. And coming from that local level, county board of supervisors and mayors, it's certainly a natural place to end up. And you're absolutely right. The principles of this movement are bottom-up thinking, bottom-up strategies, not command and control, but coordinating and cultivating, and creating a framework of regionalizing ideas and solutions that percolate up. And so the whole notion is outside in as opposed to inside out, meaning not the decisions can no longer be made exclusively from within large organizations. The private sector, and I've got close to 1,000 employees in the state, I get this intimately, and I've learned it the hard way, this idea that I can have exclusively focus things outward in my business and not engage with my customers in a feedback loop, that has hurt the businesses. And so we've dramatically evolved. Government needs to evolve accordingly.
Part of the problem, though, and is, as I alluded to in the introduction, is the cynicism that exists today with respect to government, an almost dislike of government on the part of older generations and a total passivity, as you've talked about, on the part of younger generations. And to do any of this, even to move away from what you talk about as the vending machine model of government, is going to take an engagement that transcends the cynicism of today.
Boy, you couldn't be more right. And just one proof point of that, we're now 138th in the world in voter participation. I mean, most elections now, 10 to 15% of folks show up and vote. I begin the book with Los Angeles a year and a half ago, second largest city in America, and only 12% of registered voters bothered to show up. It wasn't even a headline because it had been a trend line for decades. So you're absolutely right. We've got to reconcile that. But here's the fundamental. Whether you like government or not, none of us woke up, those that had alarm clock, without the support of a regulated utility that connected the electricity to your alarm clock. You turned on the shower, you had a drink of water, that was regulated by government. You had an egg, that was regulated at the source by government. You even may have gone to the gas station and bought some gas with tender that was legal because of the Federal Reserve government, to a gas station with gas that was regulated. So you can't escape it. There's, unless you're attempting to replicate Thoreau's experiments in the woods, at the end of the day, government is us, and it permeates our lives, and we have to reconcile the opportunity now to be more participatory in designing it in a more effective and efficient and transparent way.
Which means looking at government as much as a conduit as an end in itself.
Yeah, and this is the idea. You bring up the vending machine. You know, Donald Kettle years ago, who's a political scientist, made the case that government operates more like a traditional vending machine. You put in your taxes, a dollar or maybe a trillion quarters, and out the bottom comes services, police, fire, healthcare, education, defense. And if you don't like the choices that have been provided, what do? You protest, you shake the machine, you may kick it. You'll have the Occupy movement on one side, perhaps the Tea Party as an example on the other. And that's a framework of scarcity, of limitation. And so the argument here in the book is not looking at government as a machine or in that construct as something that is delivering services to you or at you, but as a platform where we are, as you say, convening, we're coordinating, we're collaborating, and we're co-producers, and we really connect people where they are, citizens where they are, in designing services in a more customized, not standardized way.
In many ways, it's been counterintuitive with respect to some of the ways it has worked in a negative sense, in that some of the hyperconnectivity of today has contributed in some small measure, maybe even a larger measure, to the hyperpartisanship that we have today.
Yeah, no, I one cannot deny that, and you see those extreme elements played out, and also in our choices, I mean, of media. You know, someone may read HuffPost, another Drudge. You know, you may watch Fox. I watch MSNBC. You sort of go down that list, and it sort of parses in this ideological rigidity, and we have this partisan acrimony that comes out of that. And those extreme elements certainly dominate those loud voices. But growing opportunities now breaking through that morass. There are these new opportunities with platforms that are being created, Quora.com, Localocracy, and others, that are providing cooler minds to engage in a safer dialogue where it's not the king of the hill syndrome, the loudest voice that gets the attention, but the best argument. So I think we're maturing through social media. We're maturing as we move forward in this digital revolution, to finding new ways to form a sort of civic engagement.
What do we learn from looking at some of the digital efforts, particularly in terms of both business and the nonprofit world, when we look at things like Donors Choose and Kiva and Kickstarter? What do we learn that's applicable to government?
Well, you know, the amazing thing is people want to engage now more than ever. It's interesting that particularly millennials, these 30-year-olds and younger, they're more empathetic. It's the first globalized generation in the context of their ability to connect to the world. They're more, and not only civically engaged, but more time volunteering, higher SAT scores, higher IQ scores. Just think about any of us with kids or grandkids. You know that it's more difficult than ever to get into a university. And so this is a generation that's, as you say, more frustrated with government, but not giving up, and they're engaging peer-to-peer through direct sources of engagement. And that's the donors choose model, going into the classroom and solving problems for teachers and students directly without the conduity of government. Kiva.org, going into sub-Saharan Africa and providing loans to women and girls, and now Kiva coming back to America within our own communities here at home. Kickstarter, the same notion, Indiegogo and others. So how do we take that energy that exists and redirect it to government again, and again make government more relevant in the lives of these young folks? And again, it's not just young folks, it's for everyone. So that's what the book, that's the notion of the title of the book, Citizenville. It's sort of a play on Farmville, where we're in the virtual world cultivating our gardens, spending money on it. How do we take that kind of engagement and translate it not online but offline back into our community?
I want to talk about the other side of that, the resistance to that, because even in light of some of the things you did in particular in this realm as mayor of San Francisco, some of the things Mike Bloomberg has done in New York, there is resistance not just from the public at large, but from the entrenched special interest inside government itself.
Well, you're not kidding. I call them lovingly the persuasion industry. They tend to dominate so many of the decisions we make. I think about, even without the context of the conversation on technology, you know, last March, we had a budget deal. Governor Brown had negotiated with Republican leaders and Democratic leaders that would have avoided having to go to the ballot. It would have been aggressive pension reforms and temporary tax measures, some cuts. And it was a real success to see both sides working together. What happened is just an example of the problem of government. Both sides then went back to their respective base, and the folks on the outside, not the other electeds, but their supporters, these interest groups, torpedoed the deal. And in many ways, the lesson was, well, why do you even waste your time with politicians? Why don't you just have the special interests in the negotiations, and then they'll tell the politicians how to vote? And that's the case with technology as well. You have these, and I don't, it's probably not the best phrase, it's inartful, but these IT cartels that say, hey, we'll upgrade your court system and the record system in the courts. And in 2004, they came to us with a $260 million proposal they said would be done by 2008. I kid you not, this is a fact. That $260 million consolidation effort may be done in 2015, but at the cost of now $1.9 billion. You can't make that up. And so we have got to reconcile this top-down pyramid-building framework where we allow some of my friends in the private sector to try to find their way into the public sector and oftentimes take advantage of the taxpayers in the way that some of these companies have been.
It's interesting that the new digital divide in the context of what we're talking about is between government on one side and the private sector on the other.
You got it. I mean, it's just, you know, we are on the cutting edge, technologically speaking, of 1973. I mean, just think about the DMV. Last week, front page news and a lot of the newspapers across the state, the Department of Motor Vehicles had wisely said we want to move forward to improve our system of delivering licenses and the like. And they dropped a contract, $208 million contract, wasn't even halfway done. They spent more than half of the money to upgrade a 40-year-old technology system. It's 40 years old, the DMV. It's no surprise to any of us that go online to Amazon, buy books and groceries, have them delivered the next morning. You go from that world and you walk into a line at the planning department or the building inspection department, or pay a ticket or want to protest a ticket, and you have a completely different experience. So there is this new digital divide that's not just socioeconomic, which is still a big issue, but now growing between the public sector and the private sector.
When you talk to people in the digital world, people like Biz Stone and Tim O'Reilly, when you talk to these people, how do they view government? How do they view this disconnect with respect to how far behind government is in these areas?
Well, what I love about these guys, and Biz Stone and Evan Williams, who are the co-founders of Twitter, and you know, Sergey Brin and Larry Page, friends that are co-founders of Google, and Sheryl Sandberg, who I talked to at Facebook, is they all want government to work. None of them are trying to deny the importance of government. Quite the contrary. Their whole purpose and their frustration and angst is they want to see government as to be as smart as Google. And why can't it be, is their point. Why can't we have the feedback loops that Google has? Why can't we use the technology platforms that every other year become less and less expensive to have the kind of engagement where we're humanizing government, as so many of these private sector companies have been able to advance those principles? And so that's the enlivened engagement. And that's my belief. I don't want to replace government. I want a hybrid government, though. I want to take advantage of the participatory power of social networks. I want to create a new, what I call new civic software. I want to have the civic currency that exists out there. People want to participate. They want to make a difference. They just aren't asked how to do it, and they're not asked where to direct that. And this book is really a call to action.
Is it your sense that most politicians are afraid of these ideas? They may not admit it, but there does seem to be a certain amount of fear about it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you're going to have a two-way conversation, you better be willing to commit to it. I'll give you one perfect example. President Obama, to his credit, just advanced a petition site called We the People. And they made a note that if anyone has more than 5,000 signatures or petitions, virtual or physical, the White House would respond. And you may have seen some examples recently where one talk show host on a cable news network had some strong opinions on gun control. And there were a petition that went out over 100,000 signatures asking that that talk show host be deported. And the White House was sitting there going, you know, making the point, why do we respond to this? Or a Death Star. There was a petition to actually develop a Death Star that got over, I think, 100,000 signatures. So all of a sudden now that site is being questioned whether or not it has any legitimacy at all, because the White House is sort of mocking the petitions and mocking the petitioners in kind. So you're right, politicians get very nervous about these principles, particularly openness, particularly transparency, because the more information we put up, so often in the past it's used against you, is a gotcha frame. And the goal here is to get bureaucrats and politicians of all stripes to realize that putting more out there builds trust. When we frame things in transparent terms, it builds trust. It's not just a way to take cheap shots and drive tomorrow's bad headlines.
I want to talk about it in terms of the broader framework that you look at in Citizenville, that everything that we're talking about is about a framework of abundance as opposed to scarcity. Talk about that, Kevin.
Love that. You know, in so many ways, you think about the greatness of California. Between 1950 and 1980, we were the tentpole of the American economy. No economy grew jobs at an annual rate like the state of California. We grew at an annual rate of 3.7%. The nation at an impressive clip at 2.2%, but we wildly outperformed. But what's happened in the last 30 years, between 1980 and 2010, is we flatlined. We're growing at about 1.1% from the previous three decades at 3.7, and the nation's actually outperforming California. And I say that to pick up on your question, that we've moved away from this notion of abundance, limitlessness, this idea of greatness, that we were on the leading and cutting edge, that coast of dreams, the pioneering spirit of the 50s and 60s and 70s, when we were in the future business in California, to now where we started to rest on our laurels the last three decades. We started to take things a little bit for granted. And it's a framework of scarcity now. Everyone's holding on to their patch, to their piece of the pie. There's all these trophies on the walls of all these battles that were fought by interest groups in the past. And now in this framework of scarcity, when things aren't growing as they were, everyone's now moving in with more intensity and fervor to hold on to those things because they think it's a declining pie, not an expanding pie. So this notion of abundance is principled because it's part of the American spirit, the pioneering spirit, and certainly the California dream in spirit. And I want to recapture that in the context of this notion of government as a platform, not as a vending machine.
Which brings us back around full circle to where we started, that in redefining government, in some ways, we have to redefine or restate, perhaps, the American proposition and the way these things can work together.
Yeah, and in so many ways, it's so interesting. As I was writing this book and spent a year and a half interviewing 68 people from all over the country, I kept going back to some of the principles that were advanced by our founding fathers and this notion of you know, this idealism of active citizen engagement, the original town square, as it were, the, the framework of Ben Franklin and this notion that government is about collective action, as he advanced the first volunteer fire department and the library system. And Jefferson, in many ways, this notion of self-government, these are principles that, to me, transcended, at least generationally, the values in this country. And I want to sort of recapture that, but using the democratization that these tools of technology provide to engage people where they are and to allow them to have a voice in a world where this network thinking, this bottom-up thinking, is radically altering institutions in the media, institutions in music, institutions in the financial service industry, and I believe this wave is coming to government.
Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom. His book is Citizenville, How to Take the Town Square Digital and Reinvent Government. Gavin, it's a pleasure. Thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Grateful for the time, Jeff. Thanks so much.
Thank you.